From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Financial District near the Tenderloin.
San Bruno.
North Sunnyvale.
Downtown Palo Alto, my beloved.
Redwood City.
Coming up, we'll celebrate 10 years of a public radio institution.
Close to 100,000 people have participated. I think it's made me much more hopeful about who we are as Americans.
StoryCorps founder Dave Isay joins us to talk about this special anniversary for the National Storytelling Project and where it's headed.
And, you know, the dream is that someday StoryCorps will be part of the fabric of this country.
We'll also play you some of our favorite StoryCorps interviews recorded right here in the Bay Area.
And the minute you can let go of perfection, you can do such beautiful, beautiful things.
That's all coming up today on a special StoryCorps edition of Cross Currents.
If you walk through one of the corridors of Grand Central Terminal in New York City, you'll see a soundproof booth. You can venture inside, sit down at a microphone, and tell your life story. The project is called StoryCorps, and it's meant to create an oral history of America.
That's a clip from one of the earliest mentions of StoryCorps on NPR's Morning Edition back in 2003. Behind the mic in the booth was StoryCorps founder Dave Isay. What started out as a way for people to talk about the tragedy of 9/11 turned into a national oral history project that would result in over 50,000 interviews, 4 books, animated series, and more. Founder Dave Isay recently joined us for a look back at the past 10 years of his project. But before we speak with him, we want to play you one of our favorite interviews that we've aired during our partnership with StoryCorps. Here's the story of lifelong musician Denise Woodward. As a young classical guitarist, Woodward strove for perfection, often waking up at 4:30 in the morning to practice for hours before school. Decades later, when Woodward turned 33, she decided to take up the violin. She visited the StoryCorps booth to tell her Aunt Rita about an accident that taught her how to let go of being a musical perfectionist.
I always wanted to play the violin. It's so funny. I think I was about age 33 when I decided that I was going to play the violin again. I had my very first violin recital in June. About 3 weeks before the first violin recital, I was chopping onions and daydreaming at the same time, and I chopped my finger. I cut it very, very deeply. I cut the fingernail almost all the way in half. I bandaged it up and felt bad about it and went to go play the violin, and it broke open and bled all over the violin. And the next day I went to go play and it broke open and bled again, and decided I would take a few days off. But I had this recital. It was my first recital. I had worked so hard and I was going to be perfect. My mother was flying down from Seattle to hear her daughter play me and all the 7-year-olds. And after about the fifth day, I went to play again and it bled again, and I became very depressed. I actually started to cry because I couldn't play the violin and I wanted so badly to play this recital and do so well. And plus, just because I love to play it and it's what I do every day. I remembered someone telling me the story of Butch Lumpkin. Butch Lumpkin is a world-class athlete. He's a tennis and golf pro and he has no arms. He's got hands that grow out of his arm sockets. And someone asked him once, "Butch, how do you do it?" He said, "I only concentrate on what I have. I never think about what I don't have. What do I have? I've got 3 other fingers. I've got a bow. I've got a brain. I've got passion. I've got desire. I'm going to relearn all my songs with just 3 fingers.
I can't believe it.
And I went to my lesson the next day and I told my teacher, it's got this big bloody bandage. And he's like, "Oh no, this is going to be awful." And I said, "But I relearned all my songs." And he kind of went, "Okay." And I started playing and my intonation was perfect. It was so good. My bowing, it changed. He said that, you know, all of these lyrical lines came up. My articulation was really clear. My bowing became really smooth. It used to be more scratchy. I was able to make this beautiful beautiful music. You should love your problem. Said you can hate your problem, you can love your problem, you're going to have the same problem.
That's right. And the minute you can let go of perfection, you can do such beautiful, beautiful things.
That was Denise Woodward speaking with her Aunt Rita in the San Francisco StoryCorps booth at the Contemporary Jewish Museum. I asked founder Dave Isay what makes StoryCorps such an innovative project that so many thousands of people have decided to participate.
Well, StoryCorps is such an incredibly simple idea. I'm not even sure that it could be called innovative. I mean, it's not rocket science. It's just, as you know, two people sitting together, usually two people who care about each other, having a 40-minute conversation. I think what we're in to some extent is kind of the wisdom collection business. I guess if there was a hole to fill, and it wasn't as true 10 years ago as it is today with kind of, so much happening in, social media and so forth. I mean, I guess it's about face-to-face human connection, but focusing on permanence and helping to kind of, I think what we try to do with our broadcasts and with the interviews is kind of in our own way, kind of shake people and say, this is what's important. This is what matters. This is what matters. So that's it. I mean, it's innovation. I'm not sure. It really kind of gets back to the core of who we are as human beings.
But there's this magic that happens in the StoryCorps booth because, I mean, those people, it's husband and wife, it's brother and sister, it's somebody, I live with at home and spend a lot of time with and talk a lot with. But once they get in that booth, they have these different conversations. What is it about the booth?
Yeah, and that does go back to your first question about the innovation, because I do think that, if in the history of kind of projects like this, the idea of having people who know each other interview each other is probably the thing about this that's most different. Again, a very simple idea. And I think what happens in the booth is, as the facilitators who are, bear witness to these interviews, call it the magic of the booth. It's having this time to have a conversation with a loved one, with the microphone giving you the opportunity to ask any question you want to ask, talk about things you haven't talked about before, thank them by listening to them, thank them by actually thanking them for this, interview that folks are aware is going to outlive them. It's going to go to the Library of Congress. So, five generations down, your great, 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 great grandkids are going to get to be able to hear it. So there is, I think, something that's kind of extraordinary about that moment. And I do think that StoryCorps in many ways, reminds us is a project in some ways about mortality, because I do think that people realize that this is something that's going to be, going to be there in the future. And that, in some ways the conversations are a chance for people to have the, kind of close loops and have completions with another human being. And I think of, in hospice, they say when you're dying, there are four things you want to say to someone before they die. In the conversations you have, thank you, I love you, I forgive you, forgive me, and finally goodbye. And in some ways, I think that StoryCorps experience gives you the chance to have that kind of completion and closure today without waiting until, that moment where someone's dying.
And was that what you meant it to be at the beginning? Are there any surprises about how this project evolved?
Well, and I guess I don't want to sound too lofty and that sort of completion and closure I don't think happens in everyone. We've done 50,000 interviews, it doesn't happen in every interview. I think every interview has been an important and positive experience for people. And I don't think that I had thought about that when I launched StoryCorps 10 years ago. I mean, I think what I knew was that as we said earlier, that the microphone gives you the chance to ask these questions, and also that being listened to tells people that they matter. So those were kind of the founding principles, I guess, of what would happen in the interview. And then all kinds of kind of amazing things day by day have happened in the last 10 years. I think the thing that if it's changed me in one way, and I know it's changed me in many, but if I had to pick one, I think that, you know, the experience of, you know, working with the incredible team at StoryCorps and partners like KLW, and especially the participants, the tens of thousands of participants, close to 100,000 people have participated, because in 50,000 interviews, people come in pairs. I think it's made me much more hopeful. If there was kind of one way that it changed me or surprised me about people, about who we are as Americans, about the kind of beauty and grace and poetry you can find in the stories all around you, and you take the time to listen.
That's StoryCorps founder Dave Isay, and you're listening to Cross Currents on KALW. I'm Hannah Baba. KLW has been a partner with StoryCorps locally in San Francisco for 6 years now, and we have a lot of favorites from that time. There was one about a woman who worked on the communications system for NASA's first walk on the moon.
You can also say, as a female programmer, I was one of the few female scientists working on the system. And I think it was really the first time I really started to understand some of the cultural biases that result in so few women going into math, which was my major in school, or sciences. And so I was lonely, and it made me raise my consciousness to see how can we help other women get more engaged in engineering so they could experience the thrill of being a part of something as exciting as putting a man on the moon.
And the amazing story of Bruce Steven, who was driving across the Bay Bridge when the top level collapsed during the 1989 earthquake. And then over a decade later, he survived being in one of the towers during the attacks on 9/11.
I felt like there had to be something special about me and Joan as people, that we survived these two things, that we were being saved for something special. And that's why I keep trying to do something even better than just being nice to one person, you know, being nice to everybody, somehow do something magic. And I hope I still get that opportunity to do that.
But some of the ones that stick out the most to me were from one of StoryCorps' national initiatives called the GRIOT Project, a year-long project that collected interviews from around the country specifically reflecting the lives of African Americans. In the Bay Area, the GRIOT booth was located at Frank Ogawa Plaza outside City Hall in Oakland. Here are two interviews from that initiative that we played on Cross Currents back in 2007. The first is from 82-year-old Horace Alexander, talking about his wife, Jenny, and what it was like to be a black man in love with a white woman during a time when their love was forbidden.
It was against the law in California for white people and black people, or people of any different races, to get married in the state. How we got together and how we transcended that is that we were young and in love. And love conquers all. And so we decided that it may be against the law, but it's not against our instincts as human beings to love and to get married as all other human beings. And so that was my first challenge for what I had fought for in the war. My right of free choice and association, along with free speech, which I fought for, which were among the central themes of that war for liberation and against authoritarianism. And so, therefore, what Jenny and I did is we wrote to the offices in every state asking about where we'd get married, telling them we were a black person or a white person. And we got back one letter from New Mexico, the state of New Mexico, saying that we don't have any segregation laws on our books here, so come on and get married if you want to. They ask us one question, are you human? We said yes.
Our next StoryCorps interview from the Griot Project is from Sharon Jones. Growing up in the Bay Area in the 1950s, Sharon Jones would see her father and neighbors get all excited about sports, but she was just not interested until the day she met a baseball legend.
As a child, Jackie Robinson was a speaker at a church in my neighborhood. And I didn't know who Jackie Robinson was, and I was not interested in sport. But all of the men in my neighborhood were just washing their cars and just waiting for Jackie Robinson to come home from church in Miss Anderson's car. He was going to be her dinner guest, and Miss Anderson was our next-door neighbor. And so I said, why is everybody so excited to meet somebody named Jackie Robinson? And so my father explained to me that he was the first African-American man to break the color barrier in Major League Baseball. So I still wasn't impressed. But Jackie Robinson came, and the Andersons were the first person in our neighborhood with an electric garage door opener. So as they rounded the corner, the garage door came open, and they went directly into the garage, and the door slammed, and none of the men got to see Jackie Robinson. So I knocked on the door. I said, Mrs. Anderson, who's this Jackie Robinson that everybody wants to see? And so she said, go home, girl. You know, I'm trying to cook. So Jackie Robinson said, Octavia, let the girl in. I'd like to talk to the girl. So I came in, and I saw this massive man, Jackie Robinson, and he asked me to sit down. He shook my hand, and it was like three times bigger than my hand. And I still wasn't impressed. And so I asked him, why do these men want to know you? You know, what's so special about you? And he said, well, nothing. I'm just a man, but I'm Jackie Robinson, and I broke the color barrier in Major League Baseball. And so that's probably why they want to know me. So he came to the door, and he waved to the men. Now, I didn't get his autograph. I didn't get a picture with him. There was no internet, no television cameras. But I did shake that hand, and it was the biggest hand and the strongest hand that I ever felt outside of my father's.
For Sharon Jones, that handshake was the birth of not just an interest, but a career in Major League Baseball. She went on to become the first African-American to be employed by the Oakland A's. You can hear more stories from the StoryCorps Griot Project at kalw.org. You're listening to a special edition of Cross Currents, celebrating 10 years of StoryCorps. I'm Hanat Baba. And now we turn to my conversation with StoryCorps founder Dave Isay to talk about some of the interviews that stick out most to him from the past decade.
You know, every week, there's something that happens in an interview that makes me think about that. And, you know, it's hard to, I mean, I should say that there is no interview that's any more valuable than any other one, whether it gets broadcast or not. I've been on book tour talking about the book we just released for our 10th anniversary. And there's a story in there that I play that is, you know, kind of remarkable, which the mother who interviews the young man who had murdered her son 16, 17 years before. This man, O'Shea Israel, had shot a kid named Lorraine Bird when they were both teenagers, and about 12 years into his prison sentence, the mother, Mary Johnson, went to meet the person who'd murdered her son and went back and visited, and slowly they developed a relationship, a mother-son relationship. And when he was released from the penitentiary, he ended up moving in next door to each other. And about a year after that, they came to StoryCorps to tell their story. But that's one of, I mean, literally thousands of stories about the surprising things that happened in the booth.
What do you think it does for the people to come in and to tell us these, you know, really intimate stories and to share their feelings and to be vulnerable like that?
You know, I think that, you know, nobody has to come to StoryCorps. And, you know, in many ways, it's kind of the opposite of reality TV. It's not about getting rich. It's not about being famous or getting famous. It's just this kind of act of generosity between two people. So, you know, I think of we're doing this military initiative now where we were working with people who served in post 9/11 battles, Afghanistan and Iraq. And there are so many times with folks who and their families who with folks who served where, you know, they'll tell this incredible story. And then you ask, you know, have you ever told this story before? And they'll say, you know, no. And you say, why not? And they'll say, no one ever asked. And I think people just want to be asked. And it's important. People feel like it's important to be heard and to have their story told, especially people who might feel like they're kind of most silenced in our society. It can be a very, I think, empowering thing. We've done a lot of 9/11 interviews, as you know, and we'll see firefighters and you know, policemen and others who've never talked about 9/11 before who come to StoryCorps and talk about it for the first time and cry, who would never go to a therapist because they felt like it was self-indulgent. But coming to StoryCorps lets them feel that they can have these conversations and that there's a purpose to it because they're leaving it for history. So any number of reasons, but hopefully that when that person left the booth, they felt better than they did than when they went in.
Right. Have you been in the booth? Have you been interviewed or have you interviewed somebody?
I did an interview with my dad maybe 8 years ago, and he died about a year and a half ago. He got he was, you know, a very active, healthy, we thought, guy, and was diagnosed with cancer, was working one day, went to the doctor the next day, wasn't feeling well, diagnosed with cancer, and he died 9 days later. So, you know, listening to that StoryCorps interview for the first time at 3 a.m. on the night that he, you know, died, he died at 7 a.m, was, you know, one of those moments where if I could have believed in StoryCorps any more than I already did, it was that moment that I did.
What's in store for StoryCorps in the future? What else is there?
We're at the very, very beginning of StoryCorps. I think of it as like the first pitch and the first inning of a very long game. And, you know, the dream is that someday StoryCorps will be part of the fabric of this country. And, you know, the kind of ethos of StoryCorps that's so kind of aligned with the ethos of KLW, the fact that, you know, all of our stories matter. Everybody's story, everybody's life matters equally. The importance of listening, the grace and the poetry and the beauty and wisdom and power in the stories, the people we find all around us, when we take the time to listen, the kind of, you know, beauty that's hidden in plain sight all around us, that idea of kind of clearing out the white noise, which again, I hope StoryCorps does, and taking us by the shoulder and kind of shaking us and saying, this is what's important, this is what's important, this is what's important, that someday we're part of, you know, the fabric of this country. But man, we have a very, very, very long way to go.
That's StoryCorps founder Dave Isay. You can check out his latest book, The Ties That Bind, Stories of Love and Gratitude from the First 10 Years of StoryCorps at KALW.org. That does it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. The team includes David Boyer, Jeremy Dalmas, Audrey Dilling, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Liz Pfeffer, Seth Samuel, Stephen Short, and Mary Willis. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Martina Castro is our senior producer. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. This is music by Amelia Romano and Stringquake. The trio experiments with unusual keys and improv to create their sound, and you can hear them on Friday. They'll be playing at Dolores Park Cafe at 7:30. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.